Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the City Council meeting for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, January the 19th, 2016. I currently have 7 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. We're meeting in the Civic Center of the City of Cedar Hills. Tonight's agenda, starting off with, is we'll have an invocation, which will be given by Councilmember Bailey. And then our pledge will be led by one of our scouts, Ethan Rutger. So, Mr. Bailey.
Our beloved Father in heaven, we give thee thanks at this time for this opportunity that we have to meet as a community and discuss the issues that surround us. We ask thee to please bless us with thy spirit that we can be enlightened and touched and be open-minded and be able to make the decisions that need to be made. We ask thee to please bless our community and the state, the county, and the world that we live in. And these things we ask and pray for in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Audience, please rise. Please recite the Pledge of Allegiance with me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The audience may be seated.
Thank you, Ethan. I think I've never seen it done better than that. That was awesome. All right. Next item is the approval of the meeting's agenda. So someone would like to make a motion to accept as is or to amend. I'll take that motion now.
I move that we accept the agenda as is.
Okay. I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion was seconded by Mr. Crawley. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Next item is public comments. On my sheet, I have two people that have signed up for public comments. Mrs. Wright, you wanting to speak now or when one of the agenda items comes up?
No.
Now. Okay. And then TJ, you wanting to speak now as well, right?
I didn't see a sign up. Could I have my name?
You want your name on it as well?
Yeah, Mark Allen. Thank you.
Are you speaking now or are you wanting to speak on a specific item?
Specific item.
Which resolution?
Yes, please.
Okay. It's going to be item number 9. We'll give you 3 minutes before the council discusses that, and then they will discuss it. Have I missed anyone? Okay, very good. So, Mrs. Wright, you're first.
Marisa Wright, 9102 Silver Lake Drive. I come before you as a resident and also a new member of the board of Protect and Preserve American Fork Canyon. As you know, I've come before this board asking for you to do things that would protect this canyon. But recently it's become very, very important. The Board of Adjustments in Utah County, they're meeting next month, and in as little as a month, Snowbird could be in our canyon forever. Our board has done lots of research, and the water issue is the most important right now. Through our research and the mine tailings up in Mineral Basin, they could be disrupted very, very easily if Snowbird puts in a new lift. It is a regular thing up there to do avalanche control bombings. These mine tailings are very fragile. We have learned that a Jeep recently in the past 10 years, well, recently is relative. In the past 10 years, a Jeep hit one of these mine tailing plugs, damaged it. It's never been repaired. No one has addressed the issue, and it is in Mineral Basin where these skiers would ski, where these avalanche bombs would go off. If this happens, this contamination could be life-threatening to fish and wild stock, and it could be on a level unprecedented in the state of Utah and unprecedented in the West. Please, when you're writing a resolution, Highlands resolution tonight. The writing is not strong enough, though we appreciate it. Please think about adding that you will put behind legal help if necessary. Do everything you can. I know you love the canyon as much as me and as much as all the other residents. We appreciate your backing so much. And I know all the residents with their comments in the chat room are so appreciative for all that you have done. And so I'm speaking as a resident. I'm speaking as a member, as a mother, as a member of this group, as a former city council member. I'm just really asking you to write a strong resolution tonight. Thank you.
Mrs. Wright, do you mind if I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
So I'm concerned about the watershed as well, but I just don't know. Has there ever been any instance on the Salt Lake County side where the watershed's been impacted?
Yes. I actually was given a report to a study, an assignment recently, and they have measurements of arsenic in the water. They have heavy metals in the water. They have tried to dissipate it through measurements, Snowbird, by putting it through systems, by taking snow making abilities, taking their drainage and putting it back up in snow making abilities. And they say that if we take through this water that's coming down, that's being released into the mountainside coming down from these mine tailings, and if we take it and make it into snow making abilities, then it will be recycled further. But they have done studies downriver, and they're finding arsenic in the waters. They're finding it in the fish, and already up at Tittle Fork, they're recommending that the elderly and the pregnant women do not eat these fish. And you should note that the Federal Forest Service does not put fish up in the higher reservoirs and the higher lakes. They will stock it in Tittle Fork, but the fish cannot live up in the higher reservoirs because of the higher levels of arsenic and heavy metals up there. When they make it down to Tittle Fork, they've been dissipated so much, but it's a problem. And if these mine tailings were to ever, this plug in particular that we know about, but there are many that we don't know about, but if this plug in particular were to become loosened, we can't even speculate really the damage that could happen downstream.
Thank you very much. TJ Lockbodge, did I say your name right?
Yes.
Okay, TJ, you've got 3 minutes. If you wouldn't mind giving us your name and your address, then
absolutely.
You can go.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is TJ Lockbodge. I'm a resident in 10305 Morgan Boulevard here in the townhomes. And by profession, I work on the internet. I'm an internet entrepreneur, but on the side, I'm a very passionate food blogger. And I noticed that there's not really a community garden nearby. I went on Facebook this morning and asked our community group, hey, do we have a community garden? And they suggested some plots of land in our neighborhood, and I think that this would be really beneficial. Wanted to see if the council could consider that, or direct me to figure out how to better organize it, or to see if having enough interest would allow us to have such a item. And if we do get it, I'll invite all you guys for dinner. You will really like my cooking. So that's it.
Thank you very much, TJ.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Knowlton, I think you would like to speak as well.
Yes,
is there an agenda item, or just would you like to speak now? Okay. Mr. Knowlton, you've got 3 minutes. If you wouldn't mind giving us your address, full name, please.
Mr. Mayor, Honorable Council Member, City Staff, and Mr. Shaw, good evening. My name is Bill Knowlton. I live at 3998 West Troon. My family and I have lived in Cedar Hills for a little over a year, and we absolutely love the city. We love the people. We love everything about it. And I just want to publicly go on record and thank all the elected officials here tonight for decrying the abusive and radical tactics of these so-called sovereign citizens that are trying to run roughshod over the city. Keep the faith, Don't be scared. Don't be intimidated, even if their stunts are followed with a bouquet of balloons. I support you. The city supports you. The state and the country support you. God bless you for your efforts. God bless Cedar Hills and God bless America.
Thank you, Mr. Knowlton. Appreciate that. Okay. Did I miss anyone that came in that wanted to speak during public comments and has not had an opportunity? If not, I'm going to close that part of our meeting. All right. Thank you very much. Next item is city business. Starting from my left, Mr. Bunker, time is yours.
Mayor and Council, just a reminder that this Saturday at the Provo City Hall, the Utah League of Cities and Towns is hosting a municipal officials training. And that is geared towards new city officials or past ones who would like to attend that training. It's the nuts and bolts of government. And if you're interested in registering for that, you can go on ULCT website and get on that. Couple of other items. Junior Jazz kicked off, and I did notice one of our players on the second row back here. He actually dunked it in game number two. I'm just totally kidding. It was close, though. But anyway, we really appreciate our youth being active in our sports programs and in Junior Jazz, so thank you very much. We have a BYU basketball night on January 30th, and if you would like discount tickets, those are available. You can go to cedarhills.org to get more information with that. We have not had a Timpanogos Special Service District meeting since my last report, so I have nothing to report there. That's all.
Okay, Mr. Geddes.
Yes. I would just like to report on the Utah Valley Dispatch meeting that occurred last week. The biggest thing that's happening with the dispatch is the building that's under construction. It's had a lot of problems starting because of the winter, but they're finally dug some, well, all the piers are in place because it's in a low groundwater area. They put all the piers in place, and the footings were technically going to be dug and poured this week. So I haven't confirmed that, but that's what the message is. We're on still scheduled to finish by the end of September because our board meeting in October is supposed to be in our new building. So other than that, expenditures to date on that building have been almost $1 million with the design and everything, just so updating. $920,000 has been sent. I know we have allocated, and we have our second portion being paid in this year's fiscal budget.
Can I ask, does it look like it's going to be on unbudget, did you say, or does it look like it might be over budget at this point?
It's hard to tell. I mean, there's a few change orders just trying to work through the winter, but nothing.
Nothing big. Cool.
Anything else?
One other question. One other, and I'll just get this on the public record. The Utah Valley Dispatch is in serious need of employees. So if you know people that would like to work there, they have asked us to spread the word in our cities, and it's a great job, great benefits. It's a three and a half day a week job, 3/12 and 1/6 or something like that. Anyway, if you know of anybody, it's in Spanish Fork. They pay very well and they have good benefits.
Thank you very much. I want to reiterate a little bit more of what Mr. Bunker said on the open meetings law and how you need to participate in this. So you are required once a year to participate in this. So I sit on the board of Utah League of Cities and Towns, and they recently made us get a certificate showing that we had participated in that. So if you haven't done it in the last year, you need to. It's more than a suggestion. It is required. So please participate in that. If you go to the Utah League of Cities and Towns meetings, then they do have time there, but they're also broadcast. You can go to Utah League of Cities and Towns, and I think, like Mr. Bunker said, there's one this Saturday where you'll be able to view it. But please don't ignore that. Our last Lone Peak Public Safety Board meeting, we spent the bulk of the time talking about personnel issues. So nothing to report on that. So, Mr. Cawley, do you have anything to report?
My first meeting of the North Point Solid Waste Special Service District will be this Monday, so I'm looking forward to that. The other thing I want to just talk about briefly is with this resolution that we're working on tonight, I just want to thank the council for working to get it done and the staff for coming in on a holiday to make sure that happened. I really sincerely appreciate everyone coming together on that. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Bailey?
None of my committees met this week, but I would like to just publicly give my condolences to the officer that was shot and killed up in Salt Lake City. And I'm speechless, so I just like to give my condolences. I know we've got a lot of support for that. So,
well said. Thank you very much. Mrs. Reese, do you have anything to report?
All of my committees are meeting this week, so okay. I'll have an update next time.
Thank you. Let's move on then to our scheduled items. First item number six, is an action item on acceptance of the 2015 fiscal year audit. Charles, is there someone here from the auditors, or are you going to be doing?
Would it be we do not have our auditor present, that I did not see him walk in. Is it possible that we delay this item until he gets here?
I don't know. You tell me. We did accept the agenda as is. Do we have the ability to adjust it?
Somebody could move to modify the agenda.
Somebody make a movement then to move item six. I would suggest probably after item number eight.
I move that we move item number six to after item number eight.
Okay. I'll second that. I think it was Mr. Geddes that seconded that.
I think Crowley got it.
Mr. Crowley got it. I guess.
Yes.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving on to item number seven, which is a discussion item. This is on temporary zoning ordinance and completion and timeline. So, Mr. Goodwin, are you leading off on this?
With regards to the temporary zoning ordinance that the city enacted on November 17th that places a moratorium for 6 months on the SC1 commercial zone, the city council, in conjunction with the mayor and a member of the planning commission, have been meeting weekly and will continue to meet weekly to discuss land use issues in regards to the design guidelines, the general plan, and our commercial, the SC1 code for in the city's municipal code. The discussion at this point has centered around the location of the sub-districts in the SC1 zone, as well as permitted and conditional uses that we found in those zones. The crux of the discussion is balancing the needs of the area, the needs of the neighborhood, versus the desire for the city to have a thriving commercial district and what that commercial district ultimately will look like. So we've had a bit of a discussion with this in the work session. Are there any questions for staff at this moment that we can help address, or any direction that we can, and how we should proceed in these discussions?
Council members, nothing?
I had all my things answered in work session.
Yeah, I feel like we had a pretty robust discussion, so I don't know what more I can add to that.
Okay. Chandler, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Moving on, I think you can stay right there.
Yes.
Moving on to item number eight, this is a discussion item only on a city code regarding halfway houses. Mr. Goodwin, go ahead.
Yeah, currently the city has no code regarding halfway houses. The closest we would have would be for an assisted living facility. But as discussed in the work session, any halfway house that would apply to the city would fall under the disabilities rights, or the rights for persons with disabilities under the Fair Housing Act. Just a little bit of background for those who were not here during the work session. The city did receive an inquiry regarding a possible halfway house, and this spurred the discussion on what the city legally can do and what options the city has. And the Fair Housing Act stipulates or defines a person with a disability as any person who has a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activities. It's regardless of whether you live in private or public housing. Federal laws provide the following rights to the persons with disabilities. It says prohibits discrimination against persons with disabilities, requires housing providers to make reasonable accommodations for persons with disabilities. So as we're looking through our code, we want to make sure that we're not being unfair, capricious, or arbitrary in our determination on any sort of housing options for persons with disabilities. It is unlawful to make land use policies that take action that treats groups of individuals with disabilities less favorably than other groups. The case that David and I looked at when we came through, we started discussing this with some of the other cities. Alpine recently had an issue with this. Let me see if I can find my notes for that. In Alpine, they had, if you look at the background. Sorry. In Alpine, they had a group called the Alpine Recovery Lodge come, and they wanted to have 18 unrelated individuals and 18 unrelated people living in this facility to help with drug and alcohol rehabilitation. They said that the facility was in the middle of a residential neighborhood, and Alpine said no because of the current ordinance, which only allowed 4 unrelated persons to live together. It went to court, and the city council said they could have 12 residents. ARL, the Alpine Recovery Lodge, appealed to the district court, and the city council settled with ARL out of court and granted them to have 16 residents in their facility. That's coming from the Planning Commission meetings on February 3rd, 2015 for the city of Alpine. So you can see that the city doesn't have unlimited options when dealing with halfway houses. But we wanted the city council to be aware of what's coming up, and we'll be working with our legal team to discuss any options that the city does have. So, Councilor.
That was my question, is what are our options? You talk about that the only thing that we currently have in our city code is an assisted living. Would this be considered an assisted living? Do we have to add to our code? You said this was in the southeast portion of our city.
Yeah.
So I'm just...
Well, it's in a residential zone, and in residential zones, assisted living is granted by conditional use, which is granted by the Planning Commission. And all of the language, all the text that regarding halfway houses or recovery houses, the cities and developers all need to make sure that they are providing reasonable accommodations to these sorts of individuals, these sorts of facilities. So any sort of code would need to make sure that that is reflected in the proposed code. But currently, in a residential facility, in our code, we allow up to 16 individuals, 16 beds for an assisted living facility. That's the maximum number you can have and still be considered a residential type assisted living facility. Assisted living facilities can also be for persons with disabilities, not just persons of aging individuals.
So, Chandler, this is similar to a case that happened last year in Harriman as well, I believe.
Yes, was reading about that one as well.
So Harriman denied it, and then I understand that the applicants have sued, mm-hmm. and it's on appeal, I think.
I don't know where that one stands right now, but...
But my point is, according to our codes, if they did allow 16 residents to be in that facility, would they still have to meet all the other conditions of parking and all those things
yeah.
that are required?
Yeah, so in the facility I'll give you as an example is it's now Beacon Heights, but at the time it was Osmond Senior Living. They
yeah.
took two homes, conjoined them, and then put beds and made it an assisted living facility.
And that how many units were in that? I mean, how many beds?
16.
16 beds.
16. They have the maximum number of beds you can have. Past that, they are regulated by different laws in the state, and it's considered a commercial class assisted facility. In that case, they were granted a conditional use permit. It was originally proposed as a dementia facility, but part of the conditions were that parking needed to be regulated, that lighting, I remember there's a light, they have a rock, they have some landscape lighting, that was part of the discussion as well. The city just made sure that any sort of negative impact that could be had on the surrounding area was mitigated to the greatest extent that was possible. You still find some parking on the street, but we've alleviated a lot of that by having them put up no parking signs on their fence. That's not just because we don't want them on the street, it's because some of the places they're parking were blocking some of the clear vision areas, and as you turned off of Canyon Road down onto Valley View, it made it difficult for people to see coming up and down off that road. So it was really a safety issue.
So is staff going to be working to put together some language for the council to review with regards to conditions for this type of facility?
Probably not on the conditions, but we'll definitely be looking at other cities' codes and seeing what they've got in store, what they've done. The ones that are going to be interesting are the ones that have been challenged mm-hmm. and upheld. because right now we really don't have any code regarding assisted living, or sorry, halfway houses in specific. So we'll just need to investigate this further. We wanted this to be kind of a high level discussion because we don't, like I said, there's not an application right now. But we want to be ready for any sort of application, not to deny it, but sure, to make sure that we're taking the best care of our residents as well.
So let me ask another question on that same line. So the Beacon Hill, I believe it was formerly Osmond.
Yeah.
It's been in operation 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Other than the parking issues, have we received any complaints?
No, we've gotten a couple complaints on parking, and that's issue. That's it. That's why we've had them put up signs to notify. It's mostly visitors and staff that were having the parking issue. They wanted the easiest parking to get into the facility, and so that's why we had to put up signs to redirect their parking in a way that didn't create a safety hazard for those that are pulling in and off of Canyon Road.
But as far as like residents wandering around the neighborhood or anything like that,
I've never received a call on that. I don't know that I ever would receive a call on that. That'd probably be a better question for American Fork Police Department, seeing if they've ever responded to a call. To my knowledge, they have not.
Okay.
Chandler, a couple of years ago, and it closed down, but on McNilla Creek Drive and North Meadow Drive, right at the corner there, okay, there was a home there that housed facilities like this for troubled youth, particularly young women. So we've had experience with these types of facilities. Were you around, or do you know what I'm talking about?
I have heard about it. I don't have any issue. I haven't heard of any issues that came about because of it.
Okay.
So
do we have any? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. With that home there, like I say, it's closed down now. I think I don't know who lives there now, but I know that it was set up as a halfway house.
Right.
Just was wondering if we've learned anything from that experience, or
I don't think that there was enough issues to learn anything from it. I've never heard of any issues arising from that being in existence. I don't know that the city had to alleviate any problems that came about from it being there. So that's probably why there still is nothing in the code regarding a halfway house. Okay. I think it's just,
you don't know of any of the complaints of the nearby residents.
No,
that's right in the middle of a residential.
It is, well. And I would have to go back and look at the city minutes from the approvals for that building, but to my knowledge, I don't recall any stories, hearing any stories, or seeing anything that spoke of any trouble that facility caused.
Okay, if you got a few minutes, if you could just research a little bit of possible complaints. I mean, I don't want you to take a ton of time, but
let me see
what complaints we might come up against. Because I know it is very, very difficult to regulate these types of facilities.
Yeah.
And, personally, I'm not willing to spend $100,000 or whatever dollars in legal fees knowing that we're going to lose.
Yeah. So we'll want to make sure that whatever we propose, whatever we do is safe from challenge.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, any other questions from council? No. Thank you very much, Mr. Goodwin. All right. Now we're back on item number 6, which has been moved down. Are we still on hold, Charles? Okay. Would you like to start off, Mr. Lowe?
This is our first year with Kennington and Christensen. Phil Warnock from Kennington and Christensen is one of the partners, and he just arrived here in the bad weather. We had some challenges with the new GASB standard for pensions this year. Took me a while to try to figure that out. And then we had some turnover in finance too, which was fun. But through all that, I think Kennington hopefully had a half decent experience. We'll find out. So,
okay. My name is Phil Warnock. I'm with Keddington & Christensen. We're your auditors. I want to thank you for the opportunity to work on your audit. I'd also like to apologize for not planning for the weather well enough this evening. I apologize for that. We report to you and consider this council to be those charged with governance. That is, those who are responsible for the strategic direction of Cedar Hills. You are responsible for the financial report that we audit and issue an opinion on. The audit of the financial statements does not relieve management or those charged with governance of their responsibilities. We are responsible for performing the audit in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards, and that the audit is designed to obtain reasonable rather than absolute assurance that the financial statements are free of material misstatement. An audit of the financial statement includes consideration of internal control for the purpose of designing audit procedures that are appropriate in the circumstances, but not for the purpose of expressing an opinion on the internal controls themselves. We are responsible for communicating significant matters related to the financial statement and to the audit that are, in our professional opinion, relevant to the responsibilities of those charged with governance, that is you. Generally accepted auditing standards do not require the auditor to design procedures specifically to identify matters to communicate with the council. When applicable, the auditor is also responsible for communicating particular matters required by law and regulation and so on, such as the Utah State Compliance Audit Guide. Okay? There are a few things that we have to cover as we go, as we make our presentation to you tonight. We did not encounter any significant difficulties during the audit. And to that I'm referring, for example, working with Charl and the others. They've done a good job, okay? The fact that there's a, as Charl mentioned, a new standard, that's kind of normal stuff. We just have to work through those kind of things. There were no audit adjustments, and there were no unrecorded misstatements that we need to present to you tonight. There were no disagreements with management that weren't resolved to our satisfaction. We have requested certain representations from management, and this is a normal procedure. It's called a management representation letter, and we have that letter dated December 23rd, 2015. We are not aware of management's consulting with our other auditors about the audit, and I don't have a copy of the report, so I'm going to wing it here as we go through the opinion. The opinion is unmodified. That's what is required. Let's go to the actual opinion if we could.
That way, can you make it bigger?
That will help. All we got to do is get down to that last little. Get right there. Okay, on page...
It's page 11.
Page 11. The very bottom paragraph is the opinion. In our opinion, the basic financial statement referred to above present fairly in all material respects the respective financial position of all the entities and so on. That's the part that we have to put in there, and you have to have, or it won't be accepted by the state auditor. Now, the...
Management
No. The other opinion. Crap. need someone in the back. So.
Okay.
Okay, page 107. Let's take a look at that one for a second. This is the report on the internal controls. And again, there is no real opinion. If you just scroll down a little bit. Okay, I think it's the second paragraph. It's under the heading Internal Control Over Financial Reporting. In planning performing our audit of the financial statements, we consider the city's internal control over financial reporting to determine the audit procedures that are appropriate, as I mentioned. Okay? In the circumstances for the purpose of expressing an opinion on the financial statements, but not for the purpose of expressing an opinion on the effectiveness of the city's internal controls. Accordingly, we do not express an opinion on the effectiveness of the city's internal controls. And I assure you that this is not unusual. This is what is expected. There are some individuals who think this is like the SEC type things where we have to give an opinion on that. We don't. And we're not supposed to because we don't go into enough detail to do that. Now let's take legal compliance. Might be the next page. Yeah. There you go. Okay, if we're at two pages back, I believe. I think we're on 109. Yeah, a little further down. Actually, it goes clear on the next page. It should be 110. Okay, second paragraph. In our opinion, Cedar Hills, complied in all material specs with the compliance requirements referred to above, and that could have a direct material effect on the city for the year end June 30th, 2015. Now, what do we have in the findings? Okay, on page 113, we have a finding of the budgetary compliance. During the test work of the city, we noted that the unrestricted fund balance of the general fund exceeded the limit of 25% of current year revenues in the general fund. According to UCA 10-6-116-2, accumulation of the fund balance in the city general fund may not exceed 25% of the total revenue of the city general fund for the current fiscal period. The city has accumulated more unrestricted fund balance, $1,195,000, than what the code Utah code annotated relating to cities will allow. 1,034, which is equal to that 4,139.90 times 25%. The city is not in compliance. We recommend that the city monitor the level of unrestricted fund balance more closely and ensure compliance with the requirement.
This I have a question about that real quick. That was after we already moved 175,000 over. That was before that. So that we moved it afterwards to get in compliance. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. This is one of those areas that I simply have to put it in there. I mean, sometimes I feel like I should pat you on the back for having accomplished that, and yet I have to say that it's a finding. So, yes, sir. And that's all that I've got for you this evening. Are there any questions related to the opinions that we issue, the finding, those types of things that I can answer? Any questions about the actual financial statements and the numbers? Charlotte would love to answer those, I'm sure, but anything that...
So the only finding of fact was we exceeded the amount of reserves, is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. So tell me what your name is again.
Phil Warnock.
Mr. Warnock, thanks for all the hard work that you and your team did. We do appreciate it, and we welcome you to help us with our audits every year.
We appreciate the chance to do it. Charles done a very good job.
Council, any questions?
I have a question for Charles. So on that finding, it makes mention of the fact that we're aware of that requirement and we've taken steps to reduce our unrestricted fund balance. What steps have we taken?
Back in September.
Is that the Bay Hill Park transfer?
Before that even happened. We transferred $175,000 because the revenues continued to grow and there was some under expenditure. Okay. We had already transferred $250,000 before year end above what we had originally budgeted, and
okay.
It ended up being $161,000 more.
So that's something that you're on top of and you monitor regularly?
We do, but you know, at year end, we only have 75% of some of the revenues, and most of our public work stuff happens in spring, so it's really, if they don't spend it, can't count on them not spending it. Okay.
And that was transferred to the capital projects fund, correct?
So I was too pessimistic.
Right. No, I mean, this is a good thing, right? For the audience, this is a good thing. The city did well. We saved some money. But my point is, by law, are we required to keep that all year long at that percentage? I mean, does it really matter? Do we still have to reconcile it by the end of the year?
You're just supposed to.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other comments from council?
Great job.
I just want to thank Charles for his hard work and notice that he got the award again from the... I was trying to find the exact statement. Can you state what that award is? Just the CAFR award?
Well, I applied for it again.
Right.
And so in the CAFR, it will show the one from the prior year.
Okay.
And it takes a few months for them to review it.
Gotcha. So that's what they're referring to, that one.
It's called the Certificate Achievement of in Excellence for Financial Reporting.
I think it's usually May. That.
So the city's done it for 2 years.
Huh?
And this would be their third straight year.
Awesome. And then I just wanted to ask, I would like it if they were done a little earlier next year. Have we made some plans on how to get this done earlier than this long after the end of the year?
Well, as long as we don't have any turnover and I don't see any major GASB standards, it should happen earlier.
Okay. Who did we lose this year, out of curiosity?
Lauren, she helped a lot with the budget document and the financial statements, and it takes about a year to train the other people just to do their other duties before they can help with stuff like that. So I was doing all the formatting and
gotcha.
Stuff, okay. and just the standard, trying to make sure that was ready was more time consuming than normal.
That was a very time consuming standard for everybody.
Mm-hmm. So.
Well, thanks again for your efforts.
Charles, I'd also like to echo that thought. You work really hard for us and we appreciate what you do. Thank you. Let's move on. Item number 9, which is an action item on a resolution regarding the environmental stewardship of American Fork Canyon. Mr. Allen, if you want to come up and give us 3 minutes, we're happy to have you do that.
Mayor, we need to have a motion to accept the audit report.
Yes, we do. We moved item 6 down, and so we need to do that. So someone make a motion, please, on the action item number 6, which is accepting of the 2015 fiscal year audit.
So I move that we accept the 2015 annual financial report.
Got a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion was seconded by Mrs. Reese. Let's have a roll call vote. Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey?
Thank
Aye. You. Mr. Crawley?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Mr. Zappala?
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Now, Mr. Allen, you've got 3 minutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mark Allen with Protect and Preserve American Fort Canyon. Two items.
Can you give us your address, please?
I live in Linden, Utah.
Address?
I don't disclose that.
Okay.
I don't think it's illegal.
I'm a target.
Okay.
Thank you for allowing me here. Our group has grown to 10,200 people in 9 months. Not long ago, I was here in front of you as your council members participated in passing a resolution to help protect the canyon. We have, since that time, issued many, many grammar requests to try and figure out how did we get to where we're at. And every time I turn over a rock, I wish I wouldn't turn over that rock, because I take no joy in seeing what I've, what has transpired. So two items tonight. One is protection of the canyon, which is hugely important. But we're at this stage of the game because of processes and participants in processes that I think have been unduly influenced by Snowbird. We've had 4 email accounts that have been deleted. 2 county commissioner email accounts totally gone. 2 executive assistants in Salt Lake to mayor's accounts totally gone. So in our grammar request to find the truth, we've been stymied. We've had mayors that have not responded within 10 days, rather 140 days, and then with irrelevant information. Tomorrow I'm expecting from your mayor a full chronology of a grammar that goes back to the day that after he was elected, anything that has to do with Snowbird, American Fort Canyon, anything. And we're expecting full compliance on that. One of the things I'm proud of you for, I'll tell you this, is you did not go on the Switzerland trip. Attaboy. That was the best maneuver ever. But your peers went. And there should be public outcry that we have not heard. Every elected official should be saying, what is going on here? This is like the lead up to the 2002 Olympics, from my vantage point. Men in high places that have not left trails as to what they were doing over in Switzerland. The largest campaign donors to Mayor Ben McAdams and Mayor Becker, Snowbird, incoming, $70,000. It's troubling. So where do we go from here? This resolution that you're going to pass, really, as strong as you can word it, the Board of Adjustments doesn't have to pay any attention to it. I would like you to add in EIS, Environmental Impact Statement. This is a public access issue as well. Prescriptive easements up there. 80% of Snowbird's property has historic roads go through it. 80%. The county doesn't have a map. I've created maps. It's a huge public access issue. Snowbird bought land that had prescriptive easements on it. They bought land that have points of pollution on them. They need to clean up their land. Geneva Steel's cleaning up their property. Atlas Minerals cleaning up their property. United Mines over in Park City is cleaning up their property. So that's, we're not experts. Got lots more questions than I have answers to. But I will say the one thing in closing. Fran Eichbusch, the director of the Surveyor General of the United States for surveying, he is on our team. He's very, very concerned the mill sites up there have not been inventoried. With those mill sites are arsenic, lead, they have found some little traces of uranium as well. So until we have data, informed decisions can't happen. Bob Boner said he wanted everybody to be involved in the process, but instead he's gone around behind the back door to the Board of Adjustments, where what we have to say, public input, is not even a consideration in the checkbox.
Thank you very much. By the way, I responded immediately to your grammar request and gave it to staff a couple hours after I received it. So we don't keep records back that far, but as far back as we do keep records, because we delete them after a year, I gave everything to you.
Your department's 7 years.
It isn't yet with us, and so our requirement up to this point,
it's the state requirement.
I understand that's for state agencies, not municipalities, and so we've had a policy of keeping emails up to a year and then deleting them after that. We're going to be looking at changing our retention policy, but up to this point, we've been keeping them for a year and then deleting. But I gathered everything that I have, gave it to staff, and they'll be giving it to you.
I will say I haven't deleted any emails.
What's that?
I haven't deleted any emails of importance since I started personally.
Yeah. Well, if we change our retention policy, which we're likely to do, then we will do that. But thank you. But thank you. Thank
you. We've got 5 email accounts to meet.
What's that? Okay. So anyways, action item on the canyon. So Mr. Crowley, you wanting to start or you wanting Mr. Zapala?
I would like to defer to Mr. Zapala because he has drafted the most recent version.
Okay. Mr. Zapala, time's yours.
Could I make a public comment?
We already closed public comments. Go ahead.
Sure. I guess I will read the copy of the resolution that we have drafted so far, so that the public can hear what we have. So this says it's a resolution of the Cedar Hill City Council concerning the environmental stewardship of American Fork Canyon. Whereas Cedar Hills has environmental, economic, social, and historical interests in American Fork Canyon, and where Cedar Hills desires to establish best practices and policies regarding the management and care of the canyon, and whereas Cedar Hills has an obligation and vested interest to protect the watershed and the sources and quantities of water, and whereas Cedar Hills is committed to protecting the health, safety, and welfare of its residents, whereas there is a potential for a negative impact on the city water system, and whereas there is a need to balance new development with existing recreational uses in the canyon that value isolation and the natural mountain environment. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the City of Cedar Hills believes that the proposed development by Snowbird does not meet the intent of the CE1 zone listed in Utah County Code Sections 5-5-A-2 and 5-5-A-3, and does not meet the conditions listed in Utah County Code Sections 3-47-H-3 and 3-47-H-7. City of Cedar Hills urges the Utah County Board of Adjustment to consider the potential impact on area watershed and water supply and require the applicant to provide all applicable studies to address this issue, including the long-term effect of any undesirable elements that could be transferred to the groundwater. And the City of Cedar Hills encourages the Utah County Board of Adjustment to request Utah County staff and elected officials to obtain additional input from stakeholders that use the surrounding property and commission an independent developmental impact report that is free from bias of the developer. The City of Cedar Hills urges the Utah County Commission to establish a transparent, public, and collaborative process for coordinating the land uses in American Fork Canyon that brings together all interested stakeholders, similar to the Mountain Accord process that has been used successfully in Salt Lake County. And the City of Cedar Hills urges the Utah County Commission to suspend further development in American Fork Canyon until such a collaborative process has been completed.
Okay, thank you. I have a motion.
So I didn't make a motion on that, technically.
You did?
That was just reading the resolution.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have questions before we go to a motion, if I could ask.
Yeah.
It talks about we want a process similar to the Mountain Accord process that has been used successfully in Salt Lake County. Are we happy? I mean, I don't know what the process was or how it turned out in the Mountain Accord process. If that was a good process, where did that wording come from, out of curiosity? Was that...
The process that's used there involves all stakeholders, so mm-hmm. the ski resorts are involved, mm-hmm. but in addition, environmental groups are involved, representatives from city and county governments are involved. It's a pretty wide set of interests that are there, and the idea is that they get together and learn to hash out issues in a collaborative manner, rather than trying to fight things through the courts or through zoning regulations, right? They get together and they shape a vision for how the mountain should be
used. Are we confident enough that that process was done in a way that we'd like to see it done here? I just don't know how that went good enough to say that I agree with that. But if other people here know that it went well and we're happy with it, then
I think Daniel's wording says similar to, not exact. I know Mountain Accord did have a series of public hearings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had a series of public hearings where they've invited input. They had a website where they asked for input from anyone and anyone who wanted to give it, everyone and everyone, anyone who wanted to give it. Mm-hmm. So I think that their process has definitely been more open and transparent and involved many of the stakeholders.
So at least it wasn't a quick process.
And it's been
going
on for 2-3 years?
3 years.
3 years.
$1 million. So I think that you can maybe argue about decisions that have been made, but the process of having every stakeholder at the table theoretically is a good idea.
And I agree with that.
I think that's what Daniel's saying. It's just a process where every stakeholder is there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I have a couple additional comments. One, based on some of the public testimony we've heard today from Mr. Allen, there's a couple of changes that we might consider to this resolution or additions. So in the resolution, the part where we resolve to take certain recommendations, the third paragraph where we are asking for an independent developmental impact report, I could insert two words there to say an independent developmental and environmental impact report. I believe the development report includes impact environment, but that way we'd be very clear that we're looking for environmental impact report, or an EIS as it's called. So that's one change I would like to make to what we have here. The other change that I would suggest would be a good change based on...
Could I ask a question?
Oh, go, feel free. Jump in.
On an EIS, because I've been involved in them in the past. I got to think that Snowbird was required to do an EIS, correct? I mean,
the process that's outlined in county code is simply for them to include what's called a developmental impact report, which simply addresses the conditions listed in county code, and there is no condition that says you have to do an EIS. So the report that they gave was not necessarily what you would consider an EIS.
But it might have addressed most of the issues.
It may have addressed some of the issues. It was not, in my opinion, nearly as strict as an EIS would be.
The way I understand it, though, there's been no independent report outside of them. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's
so that is important.
And I've given that feedback to the board a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't generally want somebody who owns a polluting plant or environmentally contaminated land to be the ones to give the report on what needs to be done with that land, because they have an interest in minimizing the impacts and minimizing what they need to do to clean that site up. You generally are looking for an independent report.
I will say that's very short-sighted of anyone that approves this project if they don't make somebody provide an independent report. That is just asking for problems.
So. Yeah. So I use the word independent in here.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Specifically for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
So the other issue here is I was at the Board of Adjustment meeting last time, and there were some really good comments raised about public access on that land, as Mr. Allen has also brought up today. It's not something currently mentioned in the statement, but I would be in favor of adding a short statement indicating that we would encourage the Utah County Board of Adjustment to ensure that existing public easements and public access to the land are maintained.
Yeah. Didn't you have some wording that you were going to put in about... actually, can you just read that one more time? I want to make sure that that's strong enough.
So I'm typing it up right now, and then I'll read it to you.
Okay.
So the statement is, the City of Cedar Hills encourages the Utah County Board of Adjustment to maintain existing easements and public access to the land.
Encourages, didn't we say something about that we would put forth resources to ensure that too? Could we add something like that? I mean, as long as we didn't say exactly what resources that we are committed to.
Yeah, so we had this discussion in working session, mm-hmm. and Mr. Shaw suggested the line, I read this line. It's not in the version in your packet, but I did email you the version with this line included, which says that Cedar Hills is committed to protecting the health, safety, and welfare of its residents.
I think that should be in there.
That's the language that I think ensures that we're ready to step in if we need to. And of course, this is a non-binding resolution.
Is that in the current version you're reading from then?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that in there now? Did you?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the one he read. That was the sentence that David recommended, and I like that. Or Dave, sorry.
Read it one more time.
The whole thing? Or
No, just that part.
That sentence?
Yeah.
Says, whereas Cedar Hills is committed to protecting the health, safety, and welfare of its residents.
Committed to protecting by use of its resources if necessary. I don't know. Could we add something to make it a little stronger? I don't know that we want to go as strong as we originally said.
What's your definition of resources? Because for most people, it's money.
It is vague.
Nothing's for free, right?
Right. It is a little vague, but it's on purpose vague if we said something like that. But I'd be in favor of putting something in there to that effect. We talked about putting legal resources in, and Mr. Shaw said that might be a little inadvisable even if we plan to do that. But I think putting something in there, we are willing to put forth our resources to protect our canyon. I think that would be important to put in there personally. That, I mean, it doesn't commit us to any particular amount of resources, but it says that we are committed to our canyon. Because if we're not willing to put forth any resources towards protecting our canyon, we're not committed to it. But we are committed, I think, as a city, to putting forth resources to protect our canyon, and I think that needs to be in there. That's my opinion.
I think we understand your point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else that you want to add, Daniel? Is that your motion now?
I can make a motion now.
I would like to ask if anyone agrees with that at all, that we'd be willing to put forth our resources to...
So I think the suggested change, which I, in accordance with what Rob is saying, is he would like it to say that whereas Cedar Hills is committed to using its resources to protect the health, safety, and welfare of its residents.
I just wanted to see what everyone else feels.
What do you think,
that.
David?
It's a non-binding resolution, and the commitment of resources, as said that way, Mayor raises a good point. What are those resources? How extensive are they? That's left open-ended, and so from that perspective, it really doesn't. Add or detract from the resolution. I think you go either way with it. It's not like you're saying the city will commit $100,000 of environmental impact study to fight this battle. That would be a very definitive type of resource. Here it's open ended, and so it's left to your imaginations as to what that means.
I'd just like to say I'm happy the way it is and keep it open-ended. I don't think we need to add that verbiage, in my opinion. So.
You would like the original version.
I like the original version.
I agree.
Mrs. Reese, is that what you were going to say as well? You like the original version?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this in work session. It was that same concern of, committing resources. What does that mean? To what extent? We have no idea what's being asked there. So I concur with what Mr. Shaw said in work session, and I like the current wording that was presented by Mr. Zappala.
Thank you. Mr. Bailey, any comments?
I'm just wondering if it's got enough bite to it. I know that some of the residents, or a resident that spoke today, asked that we possibly put in something that says, if we need to do legal, that we may be committed to that. And I can see that. I don't want to say, the $1 million or anything or whatnot, but I can see where that would give it some bite. I know it's a non-binding resolution, but I think that if the recipients of this resolution saw that, hey, a city is willing to at least discuss or at least review, that they are willing to go into the legal, and if we could get other cities to do the same, then that does give it that bite. You know, one other thing is, you know, this is a precious wilderness area, watershed. You know, I've been fishing up there for years, and I've read the signs that you go up and down the canyon, you know, don't eat the fish out of this river. And then I can see with what's been explained that it could get worse. And, you know, my kids, we recreate up there and we're in the water. And so, yeah, I think that we just need just a little bit more of a fight. What that actually is, I don't know. I don't know how we can do it without, you know, what Dave Shaw was mentioning was, you know, we don't want to just throw out a grenade and then have it as a dummy grenade, and we know it's a dummy grenade, and then not have it go off and then.
Well, I don't know if this helps or not, but if the city were to look at expending resources for this purpose, it would come before the residents. I guarantee you that.
Absolutely.
And so, however the language is framed, I don't have heartburn over it.
Okay.
But I don't like the idea of an open-ended thing where it says that you're using city resources, which is really money.
Right.
So, but it's up to you guys.
I believe,
I'm not going to make a big
deal.
And
Mr. Shaw, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but that sentence that Daniel added at Mr. Shaw's suggestion, the city is committed to protecting the health, safety, and welfare of its residents, gives that notice that we're committed to doing what we need to do without specifying what that may be.
I tend to agree with that. I think we're passionate about preserving, protecting the health, welfare, and safety of our residents. And whatever that takes, we will do that.
I like what you just said. You know, we will do whatever it takes to protect the health and welfare of our citizens.
What we can as a city.
There you go.
Yep.
That's in there.
I like that.
Okay, Daniel, are you wanting to make a motion?
Yes. And I'll preface my motion by reading something a friend sent to me, which I think is really apt. The statement that he said is, no society has ever regretted preserving their most valuable wilderness or watershed. I think that's just spot on. So I move that we adopt this resolution as read. So I move that we adopt resolution 1-19-2016A, the resolution of the Cedar Hills City Council concerning the environmental stewardship of the American Fork Canyon, as presented in this meeting tonight.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Crawley seconded it. Any further discussion? So vote starting from my left side. So, Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Yes.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much, everyone. Next item. Item number 10, which is a discussion on an amendment to FY 2016 budget for payment of legal fees to ETJ Law. So, on this item, I think we just want to discuss how we can have a process that pays vendors in the future. And I think that we all agree that our bill should be paid. I think that there was a failure of the system to work here properly. And so here's my understanding of the situation, which is that certain committees within the city have funds that have been allocated for them, and they have the ability to spend that money. They do report back to us. For instance, the Family Festival Committee reports back to us on how they want to orchestrate the Family Festival. We give our blessing to that, and then they spend the money they want. Same thing for Parks and Trails. But the Golf Course Committee does not have funds. So this is where this got a little bit complicated, is that Golf Course Committee made a request for resources, which is money. And that was to have our past attorney, our current attorney, come to a committee meeting and give a history in an exec session of some of the financials and bond arrangements and things like that. So I didn't authorize Mr. Johnson to be paid or to go, but the committee asked, and when they asked for that, and there was staff members there, there was council members there, and when that was noticed, then my interpretation was that the committee was asking permission, and Mr. Crawley, who was there, and Mr. Augustus was there on the dais with me as well. And so no one objected that night, but I know that Mr. Crawley a couple days later clearly understood that Mr. Johnson was being asked to come, so he said, no, I don't want him to come. And Mr. Augustus did the same thing as well. And so, but the rest of the council did not weigh in. So I didn't think about this much. And then when we got a bill, then I heard that we weren't going to pay it, so I wanted to know why. So less concerned about the amount of the bill because I spoke with Mr. Johnson, and I'm sure it's going to be reduced to whatever. But I think we need to talk about in the future is creating a policy whereby if a committee like the Golf Course Committee asks for resources, then there is a procedure whereby staff comes to us and says, you need to do this in order to make that happen. And so when I didn't hear from anyone an objection, then I assumed that we were proceeding down the right path. And so let's talk about a process whereby this doesn't happen again, and see if we can come up with a way whereby committees who don't have funds can ask for them, and when they ask for them, then we have to have a procedure where they are denied that or they're granted that.
So can I weigh in for just a second?
Yeah.
Because I had a perfect example of this last year on the Park Rec Beautification Committee that I sat on.
They have funds, right?
No. They have no funds. Well, other than for specific, like the breakfast funds. And the, you know, the things that they put on, right? Yeah. They have funds for that. But an instance where they came up with the redesign of the roundabout, for instance, right? So there were no funds allocated for that. And as the council representative, I came back to the council requesting it was $1,000 to pay, you know, for a design, and it was debated and shut down. So I think that's the procedure that we have in place. It's just that it fell through the cracks on the golf course committee, I believe, right?
Yeah, and so I think that's accurate, whereas I thought that there was not a majority of council that had said no, because there was two of them that clearly said no, but there was three others that did not. So until later, there was three that denied payment. So let's just see if we can come
up. I don't want to get too specific about that particular invoice that we're talking about, because you know it will be worked out somehow. I mean, I know several people have weighed in on it, and we'll figure that out, right?
Yes.
But in the future, I just think that was just probably an oversight. I mean, I think now that we're all aware of it, the committees were over now. If there's an extra expenditure that is apparent that's going to come up, needs to come back to the council.
I think you're absolutely right, is that it needs to come back to the full council.
Full council, yes.
Not individual council members until you have a majority of three.
Right.
And then the rest of the council members know nothing about it.
Yes, I agree with that.
That is unacceptable.
Yeah.
So I did recommend that in email, and that was my question, is you said we have a policy for that, but do we? Is there a written policy for a committee who wants funds from the council? And if not, we need to put one together. Because I think we have just kind of this understanding,
right. I think that's
but not an
question.
Actual policy.
Do we know, David?
We do have a policy. It's a procurement policy. And it's for any committee or any expenditure in the city. And it's through the budget process. If it's not budgeted for, then it has to come back to the council to be budgeted and to be to have funds allocated. So that's with any committee. That's with any purchase that we make. That's part of our budget process, to be open and transparent.
But it's not really procurement, because, for instance, the city breakfast, you're not sending out bids and all that kind of stuff.
It's still procurement.
Okay,
absolutely, it is.
So in this case then, because the golf course committee actually generated quite a few invoices for legal expenses without coming back to the council, how, I mean, was we just overlooked the procurement policy, just fell through the cracks?
So if we had a contract, and I can have maybe Mr. Shaw chime in here, but we have a contract with Kurt and McConkie. If we were to use Kurt and McConkie, which we already have a contract for, we could have used that legal advice. We have an hourly rate. We have a contract with them that specifies exactly what the parameters of that contract would be. We could use them. The issue is when we go outside of that, we can't go out and hire another firm just because we want them unless we go back and actually get a contract, we procure them in the right way, and the council sets aside funds for that.
So
what if we
have
a certain number of hours set aside for Mr. Shaw, like 20 hours? Who decides how that 20 hours is spent? Or let's imagine we had a certain amount of money set aside for office supplies or something for a committee. I mean, who decides how much of that is spent?
You do. You guys decide the amounts on that. So let's say that the Parks and Trails Committee wants supplies. It has to be – you have to go through the budget process.
No, I'm saying there already is a budget. Let's imagine there already was a budget item for that.
Yeah.
Who decides how those supplies are – that amount is spent? Say there was $1,000 for supplies. You want to buy binders? You want to buy paper clips? Who decides?
I don't think it's – supplies is a very general thing. You know, for instance, on Parks and Trails, they wanted to do a beautification on Canyon Road. Well, they might need some fabric, some weed fabric, plus some rocks or something like that. There's no allocation saying X dollars is for rocks, X dollars is for weed fabric. They just go get that. As long as they stay within their budget, they're okay. The minute they go over that budget, they have to come back to the city council and say, hey, we ran out of money. We only were able to buy fabric. We need rocks. They'll have to come back and ask for that.
So I guess what I'm trying to get to, and I think what Daniel's trying to get to as well, is you said, I got the impression from you that you're saying the golf course committee didn't need council approval because we had a legal budget. But my concern is we have a set legal budget. We budgeted X number of dollars. We don't want the golf course committee using 80% of that. So who tells them in order to use any of it, you've got to get permission from the council?
It should have been, you know, either staff, maybe we dropped the ball, or the council representative. They didn't have a budget set aside for their committee.
So that's where I think that we need to fix. That's the policy I'm talking about, is even if we have a fund allocated for resources, if that committee doesn't have a budget at all and they want to use some of those resources that have been allocated to the general running of the city, that needs to come back to the council. Because
that's right.
I think, where we ran into this issue with this golf committee for legal all the way around.
Yeah. So now, just like rocks is a general term, isn't legal expenses a general term as well?
Not necessarily, because it's a professional contract.
Well, no, we have a professional contract with Kurt McConkie, but
that's right.
In the budget, there is legal expenses. So if the council wanted Jody Hoffman from the league to come and talk to us about land use issues or whatever, she could come back. The council would be told that she's coming in to talk to us, and they know that we're going to be paying for it. But still, legal expenses, in my mind, tends to encompass all of our legal expenses, which could include Jody Hoffman from the league. It could include the guy who did our bond counsel. It could include Kurt McConkie. Am I wrong? It seems as if...
I think that's incorrect in one sense, but maybe David could...
Mayor, I think you're correct on that. But I think there's a nuance that's being missed here, and that is that prior to Jody Hoffman coming in and providing that service, there should be a contract entered into. Because it's not just about procurement, it's also about the basis for payment. And so when it comes around to audit time, what is the basis for the payment? In other words, what does the invoice tie back to? Is it a purchase order or is it a contract? Purchase order is a contract because it has terms and conditions. So as long as you have one of the two of those to back up the invoice, now you're safe from an audit perspective.
I get that. And so I wasn't that involved with this process until later on when I found out a bill hadn't been paid. But I do remember an email that was asked of Mr. Johnson, I think from you, Mr. Shaw, regarding a letter of engagement, which he told me still existed, and Cedar Hills had never rescinded that. Therefore, in his mind, he had a right to do business with the city. Now, he may be wrong, but that was what he said. Now, I don't want to get into the weeds here. I just want to see if we can figure out a process whereby if someone does business with the city, whoever that company person is they have a reasonable expectation of being paid. And I think it's wrong when individual council members are gone to until you get a majority in order to pay or not pay. I think that's wrong. And so we need to come up with a policy whereby it comes back to the entire council, where the entire council can say yay or nay. That's my only point.
And Mayor, I don't disagree with that at all. But I think we can work with staff and as staff to perhaps tighten down the contracting process to make sure that those cracks aren't wide enough to have things slip through them.
Yeah, I agree. And
now,
so
now whether you pay Mr. Johnson or not, that's your decision.
Yeah, and so I think that's going to have to come back to the council in terms of whether we do that or not. But, you know, and this could be partly my fault, is that in the golf course committee, when the golf course committee asked for resources, meaning they asked for Mr. Johnson to come and speak, I didn't hear a majority of objections, and I didn't hear anyone from staff saying, do this, don't do this. So my interpretation was that he was able to come and present to the committee. And if you listen to the audio, you know that I said on the 10th, I think is what it was, Mr. Johnson appeared at the first meeting as a favor to me and did not charge. But if the committee asked him to come back for a second meeting, he is going to submit a bill. Everyone was there, heard that. Now, that wasn't me authorizing Mr. Johnson in any way. And the committee doesn't have the ability to authorize Mr. Johnson to come either. That was their expression of interest, saying we want to expend city resources. And then if there would have been objections, I would have hoped or expected some objections to come from someone. I didn't hear it, so I assumed it was good. But that could be partly my fault as well. So anyways, again, don't want to get into the weeds, but let's figure out a way to make sure that anyone that does business with our city has reasonable expectation of being paid.
So it was clearly a breakdown in communication in multiple. I don't think we need to figure out who's at fault. It's just it didn't work the way it's supposed to. So what I recommended in my email was actually two things, though, which was that we have a policy that we as council members and staff know what to do when our committee that we oversee wants to use funds or resources that are going to be invoiced to the city. And I would even include things that have already been authorized. Like I said, our legal team, we don't want, it's different now that we're on a flat rate, but we wouldn't want somebody, one committee, utilizing a large chunk of our budget for one thing. We want those kinds of things to come back to the council. So if they don't have a budget that has already been authorized by the council and they want to use resources, they need to come back to the council and ask for authorization on that. And then the other suggestion I had as part of that policy was that same policy apply to council and staff, meaning for a while we had an hourly rate with Kurt McConkie. We didn't have a flat rate, and so it was the same thing where anybody could go and use those resources without the authorization of the council, and maybe the council doesn't want those resources to be used for that.
Absolutely.
So on areas where it's going to increase our costs or utilize portions of our budget, I think those things should come back to the council for discussion and approval, so that way we're all on the same page knowing how our funds are being spent.
I agree. Okay.
I agree too. That's good.
You okay? You okay down there, Ben?
Yeah. You know, the thing is we're all human, and I saw this in the fire department in the Lone Peak Public Safety Board where the fire chief expended some money, then went to ask for permission after the fact, and our mayor, you know, politely suggested, hey, next time maybe you come to us and ask. It's going to happen. I don't know if we can completely close that loop, but I agree with Jenny.
Okay. Anything from this side, Daniel?
Yeah, I just want to ask.
I've said enough.
Did you want to say
something? No, I've said enough.
Oh, okay, great. I just wanted to ask David and maybe Charles if he needs to chime in. I'm not sure. So I'm not as concerned anymore with our legal resources because we do have a contract that is a flat rate. Is there anything else that we're overlooking where we have a pool of resources where I could decide I want to spend some of it, Jenny could decide she wants to spend of it, Gary could decide he wants to spend of it, and oops, we need to coordinate that better, otherwise we're going to end up at loggerheads.
Can I add a quick caveat to that, though, Daniel? That's not quite true with our legal. We could have council members going and saying, I want you to research this litigation issue
that's
for
right.
me, and it's going to be billed at an hourly rate. Those things should
yes.
come back to the council.
Okay.
Good. Yeah. So, yeah, when it comes to litigation, we ought to be agreeing in an executive session on how to spend that money. But is there any other pot of money that we need to be more careful about?
I can't think
maybe,
of anything that's
maybe
that
that's
broad.
A little homework assignment to go back and double check.
Yeah, we'll double check that and report on that.
Maybe if you, I don't want to air any dirty laundry, and there probably isn't any. But David, if there was anything else that kind of was a breakdown during year two, maybe you could private email us and just say this is another example that we could have done better. If there's anything else, but I don't know that needs to be mentioned in this meeting. But just think through the year. I mean, if nothing else besides this happened, that's great. So.
Okay. All right. That is it, ladies and gentlemen. I'll take a motion to adjourn.
Can I ask a quick clarifying though on Mr. Johnson's invoice? It sounded like the last thing was there was some concern about the number of hours that he billed. Is someone reaching out to him to ask him to negotiate that, or what's happening?
I think the mayor spoke.
I asked him to look at his invoices, and because he hadn't even looked at them, his bookkeeper apparently had, and so I said. And I said, quite frankly to him, this looks a little high to me.
So he's going to review it and get back to us, and this will come back to the council.
That was my understanding. He's going to look at his invoices, and that's why I'm convinced the cost is going to come down. How much, I don't know. So then it'll come back to the council.
Just to clarify, so does the council want that to come back as a budget amendment?
I would say yes.
Yeah, we want to at least see a revised invoice and figure out how to deal with it.
Yeah, yeah. Council can always say no, but the full council should be looking at this.
I don't think we should have a budget amendment for it. I think we should look at it and decide how much, if any, we're going to pay. And maybe we can do that by email. It's a little less awkward, but I'm not sure we need to have a budget amendment, unless it's a huge amount.
We will figure it out.
We have to budget amend for legal in general anyway, because we're already going to be over.
Yeah, budget amending for legal is happening anyway.
Right.
Yeah, we do that often.
I just was thinking special for this invoice. I would think that I would leave that.
All right, now, somebody make a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion was seconded by Mr. Geddes. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.